Hi, I am Nirmal Sarkar, and you are listening to the Crypto Hub India podcast. We are a group of crypto enthusiasts, and this podcast is nothing but a collection of our Clubhouse live sessions, where we discuss the latest crypto trends from India. Well, this also means you can directly participate on our Clubhouse sessions and become a part of our next episode. Come, join us. Visit CryptoHubIndia.com to get all our social links. Thank you.
Hey guys, so I've been listening to this and I've been thinking about it. So I have one question, maybe Karma can answer that. In a scenario where a government agency is handling a cryptocurrency, why does it has to run on a private blockchain? I mean, it does not make sense because blocks are basically computers. So why do you need, if something is private and it actually does not need any validation because you are basically controlling it? There is no sense in running it on blockchain. So why to keep the ledger on blockchain if government is launching any cryptocurrencies? They can just use a more efficient database. That's just senseless to me, because you know it cannot be a cryptocurrency on blockchain. I'm pretty sure if they are even saying to us that it would be on blockchain, I would doubt it would
actually. No, it is not a cryptocurrency. That's why it has a name, dedicated name, like central backed currency. So if it is backed by any central authority, so that means it is not a cryptocurrency, but still they have to use a blockchain. So indirectly you have a INR.
But why do you have to use a blockchain?
They need the blockchain. I haven't even searched why they need. There will be some positive side as well to use the blockchain. There are some for corporate, but I don't know about the government, how they're gonna be help, how they are it gonna be helping. Sure, with that it may be possible there will be some areas that may gonna benefit the government if they use a blockchain. That's why they are using it and they are going for it. Otherwise, it is not a cryptocurrency, and it cannot be work as a cryptocurrency, because the purpose was to be decentralized. If you're gonna go for cryptocurrency, the first thing comes with the decentralization not present, and the CBDC actually have a central. The first thing comes with the central bank, then you cannot compare it with. That is a different thing. They just don't use the blockchain.
No, the real reason of having a blockchain is basically, if you understand, it's a triple entry ledger. Okay, so which was not there earlier in the world. You know, all the accounting in the world has been happening on a double account entry. You know, double entry ledgers. The triple entry ensures that there is a seal on the transaction, whichever has happened between two parties, and nobody can edit or delete it. So that is the power of having a blockchain technology. In real time, you can just ensure all the transactions cannot be deleted once they have been.
So basically, it's resilience, right? So resilience is existing already in whatever department you want to execute it.
Not really. That's
Nidesh, like how resilience is there? I mean, you can deploy a distributed database, that would work. But there are scenarios where distributed databases don't lack some properties the blockchain has, right? For example, immutability, right? You can manipulate the data even in a distributed database very easily, right? You just have to change the entry, that's it. But in blockchain, it's technical. You know what is blockchain, right? So every transaction is linked to the previous hash of the previous transaction. So by nature, it is immutable, right? So you get the a very good immutability, right?
But the point of private blockchain is that you have control over it. That means it's mutable, right?
No. I'm not saying about public or private.
No, the currency would be private, right? It won't be like you cannot mine it. The government will hand it over to you.
Nilesh, I'm not clear about your question. So is your question that if the government is coming up with CBDC,
why has to be on a blockchain? That's my question. Why does it has to be on a blockchain?
Because the whole premise is that governments are trying to get a digital currency that can be exchanged on the blockchain for the purposes
Is this argument, because you want to do it on blockchain, that's why we are doing on blockchain. If that's the reason they're
I think it's more like current... let's say you have a DeFi app on Ethereum network. And you go to the app. That app's gonna return you. I don't know. You're providing some liquidity to it, INR versus just say Ethereum, right? You want to sort of pool in, and it's going to give you, rewards in INR, for example, right? And now you want to exchange that INR to, let's say, cash, because maybe, next 10 years, everything's not going to be on digital INR. So you need to be able to exchange that. So, but your denomination here is INR. So if a CBDC-based INR you want to use on Ethereum blockchain, somebody's got to mint it, and somebody's got to manage the supply of it. And that's what, the governments will be in the business of what they do, sort of in the business. I mean, we can argue if they do it good or bad, but they would be in the business of minting and burning it. But then the liquidity providers are going to provide that liquidity on Ethereum network for the INR. So that exchange is not possible unless you have it sort of on the blockchain, right? Otherwise, it's just going to be like a digital currency the way you have today. So like every, like when you have, your bank account, it's just a number. It's just a transaction in a certain ledger, which is just digital, right? It's not going to be any different the way you have today, right?
So you mean to say that when this would be launched, we could trade it on WazirX?
That's right. So you should, the goal should be that the CBDC should be tradable on.
So we can do it by INR already, right?
No, we don't have INR.
No.
If you see that's just a number they are giving you. Just for example, there is a USDT over there. But the USDT is actually a token. It's a token of that Tether. But when you trade in INR, you don't have any coin. They just calculate on the basis of INR value. There is no coin or token behind that INR. But behind that USDT, there is a token, you can withdraw it. But if you have to withdraw INR from wallet to wallet, you cannot do it. In INR, you just got two options, either to withdraw it or if you want to deposit it, you can deposit through your bank or any gateway. So you're just depositing INR on a wallet, just like you are using PhonePe or Paytm wallet to load up your cash on that. But basically, if you have an option of CBDC, I'm not even expecting that a government will allow us to use it for trade, with the DeFi even. Maybe possible, but I'm not expecting it. But still, if they are gonna do it, it will be different from the current INR pair. If you are right now seeing WazirX, that is a INR pair. It is a INR pair, but you don't have a token of INR right now. So I'm not saying that they're gonna replace it, but I'm just giving a reference that INR is just a number over there. There is no token behind that. But if you have a token for INR, you can actually withdraw it just like you withdraw USDT from wallet to wallet, from exchange to exchange. You don't have an option for INR over there. So
yeah, to make it more real, Nilesh, if I may add, let's say from your WazirX INR that you have, you want to transfer that over to me, you can't do that because it's not a token. But the CBDC, if it goes in that direction, it has the ability to make that possible. If it's an ERC-20 or whatever token, standard we have on any network, you're able to transfer
it
then
on a
click
of
a button.
Blockchain. Yeah, it will be on a private blockchain first of all, and if then government wish to bridge it, they can bridge it. But I don't think government will gonna create any direct bridge to the crypto market. Maybe in future, possible, but currently for next 2-3 years, I don't think government gonna allow us to use that CBDC with crypto market or DeFi market or for even an exchange. If
so
they
then
do
it, begs
it
the question, what is the use of creating it on a private blockchain that nobody uses?
I'm still wondering. As I said, I don't know why the government is doing it, but I don't think they're going to allow it because for me, like for India, I think Indian government is against the crypto. So I don't think they're going to allow us to use that crypto, the CBDC in the crypto market. So
okay. Karma, so yeah, let's assume that everything goes well and they do eventually list it like a token on a market which you can buy and sell and exchange with other tokens. Let's be optimistic about it. But still, then when I send a token to Sundar, maybe the transaction will take place, and instead of miners getting that validation and doing that validation, the government will do that validation. Why does the government need blockchain technology to do that validation? I don't understand why the blockchain is required here, because if you're a private entity, no, if you blockchain
are,
is
you
know,
suppose here. It like suppose as you said that suppose we are going to get the CBDC option on the wallet, so then you need the blockchain. Like it is not only that I'm gonna withdraw from this to this. Like suppose only WazirX to WazirX, I have to I can withdraw it to my wallet as well. There you need this blockchain. Suppose if you want you can say trade with CBDC, suppose you are trading in CBDC and then you converted all your profit to CBDC and now you want to withdraw it, so you can withdraw it to any different account as well, and you cannot do it without CBDC. It can be off chain from between like exchange to exchange, like Coinbase and Binance, multiple exchanges have it that you can transfer your asset within native, you can say companies, like within the same exchange. So you can do it if the company allows, but on chain, if you want to use it any different thing, if you want to use DeFi, then you need the blockchain. That's how you're going to be interact with the DeFi. If you don't have a blockchain, how are you going to be interacting with the DeFi? So if you want to interact it, if you are assuming that CBDC may be going to be replacing the INR option and maybe going to allow us to interact with the DeFi, then you need the blockchain. So this is the answer.
And also,
I think I'm understanding, Nilesh, your question. Your question is that let's assume it's not even DeFi, it's not even integration to other public blockchains. But let's say if you want to transfer money to Sundar, why do you need a private blockchain? I think that's your question, right?
That's exactly my question.
If it is obfuscated
from you, if you can't even see the system, if it is private system, why does it have to be on blockchain?
Yeah, and that's the reason for that is because your account and Sundar's account is not, it has to have some common medium to transfer value. So even if the government creates, let's say, a CBDC, and then you're saying if they create the backend to allow for that transfer, then think about it. You do have your account on some kind of a government system ledger, and Sundar's got to have the same account in the same system somewhere. Only then government can orchestrate that transfer. Like to do the transfer, it's got to be on some kind of a same.
Definitely, brother. I understand it has to be on the system. But the definition of a blockchain is that hundreds and thousands of computers running. And basically, it's more of an issue of data duplication, which I don't know why would a private company would do, you know. So you just have to maintain a ledger. Yeah. Maybe you want some resiliency in transaction and all. So maybe you can do all classic data backups and whatever is done already in banking sector. So just
I got
run,
your question, Nilesh. Let me answer it. Like 1 minute, Sundar and you. See, it's more about having a better system in place, right? Your question, I understand. Like, why can't we use a normal database like what we are doing today to store the transaction? Like, why do we need blockchain? That's your question, right? The thing is, you know, blockchain system is more secure against external attacks, right? Right now, our banking systems are secure, but they are secured by external security forces and they are by external gateways, right? Once the hacker gets into the database, he can easily manipulate all the records and he can do anything. Even he can transfer some money to his account and nobody would know about those things, right? But having a blockchain in place, right, it is going to provide that kind of immutability and resiliency within the chain itself. That means it is secure against external attacks. Government can manipulate it because in case, like, even we don't know like whether it is going to be a public chain, private chain, or we are not sure yet. Even though it is private, government can manipulate it, but it is, it provides some kind of security against external attacks. That is one thing. Second thing, it provides better traceability than the existing databases, right? Since I said like the databases right now are easily mutable, I can delete the logs as well and I can go record like the transaction I made, there won't be any trace at all. But in blockchain, every record, every transaction is recorded and it is immutable. That means like, government can better keep track of illegal activities with blockchain, right? These are the two advantages, Nilesh.
So, like when I read about it, I was doing my engineering and all. So, it works like a linked list, and it is very easy to delete a specific record or a specific list and a specific block in the linked list. So, you just have to change the previous pointer and the next pointer, and nobody would know that a transaction was there. So,
that is the core principle of blockchain you are saying. But, you know, by the concept of mining, they have made this process more difficult, right? I understand you can easily change the pointers, but in reality, it's not like that. When you are going to change a pointer, like if you are going to remove a block a normal algorithm I would take, right? Like where you are removing element n from the linked list in between. And that is fine for linked lists. And but
immutability, it does not apply, like you're saying. That's all I want to, because
yes,
we know that
the process of mining, Nilesh, like through mining or proof of stake, people have made that more difficult and harder, right? Cryptographically, they have made it harder. Even in private, it is harder. Like you have to spend a lot. Even the government, right? If they are running 100,000 nodes, for example. Sorry, 100,000 is an overkill, right? Like 100 nodes. They have to run the same process everywhere, and it is going to pull a lot of power. Right?
It's nothing. 100 is nothing, right?
I mean, if you're talking about a private network, then this whole concept of proof of work and proof of stake literally goes away. You're talking about trusted nodes here who have the ability to validate. In this case, it'll be government, you know, nodes run by the government. So I think we're going in a totally different dimension here. Because at the end of the day, immutability of every transaction has to be confirmed, right? Either you do it through proof of work, proof of stake, delegated proof of stake, whatever you want to call it, right, in the public blockchain world. In the private blockchain, you've got designated trusted nodes. It doesn't have to be 100 nodes. It may be one or two nodes, three nodes, just for backup, whatever, and depends on the volume of transactions that they have to deal with. So you can scale it sideways, horizontally, vertically, depending upon, you know, what your need is. But it's a trusted node. This whole concept of proof of work, proof of stake.
All of the systems that government has that run all these RBI transactions and all, all are trusted nodes.
They're all trusted
already.
Nodes.
Yeah.
Yes, they are. And that's what we're saying. So if you're talking about and that's what my point is, if you're talking about a CBDC currency that has to be on a government's private network, I mean, they're free to do whatever they want to do with that. But at the end of the day, there's not going to be any demand for that currency. The only use case then you're driving is Nilesh trying to transfer something to Sundar, or maybe, you know, Nilesh trying to transfer something to some company that has some application that is running on that private network, you know, that is run by the government. So, but that is very limiting, and whatever would be the demand for CBDC, so be it. But the bulk of the transaction in DeFi and all those things and all the good things that we're talking about, governments just would not have any ability to influence or exert any influence at all in those areas, right? Plus, I mean, there wouldn't be any demand for INR CBDC. It'll just be limited demand of some of these use cases we chatted about.
Yeah, but
to
it
your
is going
point,
to be better
do
than
they need to have a
blockchain?
To your point, do they need to have a blockchain, or do they just want to have a bunch of servers directly maintaining the ledger? Sure, like they're free to do that. Because in this case, on a private network, government is in that trusted role. You're not having, it doesn't have to be blockchain, you're right. They can just run a server. But then that's not their business. That's not what their expertise in. And I'd be really surprised if governments try to do that, because that doesn't make any sense at all. Why would they try to do that?
Exactly.
But if the government is not up to date with the latest technologies, then it cannot protect. There's a security, national security issue there. So every possible technology the government should be aware of in depth. So they would try to create that and try to experiment with that and get to know the knowledge behind it. But definitely they will use it for the government schemes. You know, basically it gives a transparency. They don't need banks as a middleman. If you see even the money that originates from tax money and the budget money that needs to go to a particular individual in a country, say a scheme is being offered. So how do they ensure or track that? In the current scenario, they don't know, even if you take some road contracts or even if you take some municipal contracts that are going through, there is no transparency there. You know, the middlemen take away or eat away the money. Or even if there are certain schemes where the individual needs to benefit, say a poor man's home, or he's being given some money, you know, the traceability factor is high in using blockchain. Basically, it is immutable. That is the reason that government
On that, Sundar, I have to say is like, it's the problem is not really where the money goes there. The problem is really where the money ends up.
Yeah, where the money ends up. Yeah, right.
Exactly, right. And I don't know whether, you know, this system would mean, you know, at the end of the day, can go that far that entire country is on some kind of a private network, and you know, let's say government says, you know, you allocate like $10,000 for a certain initiative, then this $10,000 gets transferred to some department's account, and then from that department's account, it goes to, I don't know, a construction company's account on the same network, and then that construction company has, let's say, you know, 20 suppliers, and all of those accounts are on the same network, and then you're able to see where the money went. Sure, I mean, it has gone to, let's say, 40 odd suppliers, that 10,000 has broken down to those 40 people, and then there are cash withdrawals, or like, where do they kind of, you know, route those funds, and all of those people are also on the same network, right? And then at some point, the money is gonna like get converted to work, somebody's getting paid, and all of them are also on the same network. I mean, you know, yeah, I think I know where you're going with that, but if that's the vision and they can reach that point, that'll be amazing. But then in that case, the role of the government has transformed into the role of a bank, so to speak, right? A big Absolutely. Bank that has got all the accounts of all its citizens, like one bank. You're talking about this concept of one bank in that case, right?
That's true. You know, the innovation has to go that way. You know, the dependency of the countries on all the private banks, you know, I mean, if you see the kind of financial scams that have happened, you know, over the past, you know, since the fiat currency came into existence, it's been more of bank scams, and not a single person is being jailed or going to prison, but only they are fining them and letting go. It's like a slap on the wrist and letting them go. You know, why do we need banks, you know, in that case? You know, if that needs to go, then it needs to go. We don't need middlemen here. So,
yeah, but you're arguing for the concept of having a central bank being the retail bank.
Yeah, that's what, right? Because we are actually having limited to the, you know, every country is limited to the national identity. If we take a, you know, if we are open to the, if we are broad-minded to become world citizens, I would definitely, nobody needs central bank, you know, and Bitcoin is enough. You know, it's a single store of value, sound money, and we can take it as a cryptocurrency for the world, whole world. And I'll vouch for that anytime, you know, if we want to become world citizens. But we are now the highest level of identity, a person of any country has chosen is, you know, we are limited to nations. So this is what Bitcoin is trying to, you know.
No, create. So this is where you lose me, actually. I think we were going in the direction of central banks, like being the custodian of how much money supply is created and destroyed. Central banks, right? I mean, that was the, I think, chain of thought. But I think that is totally separate from this ideological view of Bitcoin becoming the world currency. I think I don't subscribe to that thought process. So I'd stay with the first part that we chatted, but not, you know, in support of Bitcoin. I mean, and I think I made my point clear, you know, my at least thinking as to it's just not stable enough. It's highly inflationary. It doesn't hold the value. You can buy something today for, let's say, if somebody pays you point whatever, but let's say one Bitcoin for something, you don't know what's going to be worth tomorrow, right? It's just not stable enough. For anything to be currency, the basic characteristic of anything, it has to be stable, right?
Nations did not come to the fiat currencies just like that, you know. In back old days, we had gold. Gold was the sound money, and it was being treated as a currency. You know, there was a lot of volatility in gold when gold was trying to capture itself to become the sound money of the planet. You know, it went through a lot of volatilities. Yeah, we are ready.
Yeah, and it failed.
We're still volatile, and volatility is part of the thing. Once we make everyone understand the real power of having, you know, the humans have created something which is a perfect money or a sound money almost, which can replace gold standard. That's the understanding people should come to when you see or visualize Bitcoin. I recommend people going through this Bitcoin standard. There's a book by Saifedean Ammous.
You made a great point. Gold. And you know what happened to the gold standard. It's gone.
That's gone. Because, survive. You know, anything physical in nature can be confiscated by humans.
The problem was not physical. The problem was how things were quantified to the gold standard. And then the gold had the supply and demand problems. And obviously, its value was not constant. So, and that's why the gold standard went, right? I mean, if you look into the history of why all the companies, it was part of the evolution. So gold standard came in when anything before that was not good enough. Sure, gold standard worked till a certain point when the economy was not so complex, world trade was not so such a big deal, every company could just keep, you know, bars of gold in their central reserve and kind of mint money according to it, regulate the supply, right? Tying to gold. But then gold became, started rising in value. Gold's demand, like, so it just fell apart. And that's when, like I don't even know if there's any country in the world that's left on the gold standard. So there's a reason why gold did not work as a standard. And Bitcoin being the gold standard definitely doesn't fit the case. We're not going to go back and do what didn't work 50 years ago, right?
It is definitely not gold standard. It's better than that. That's what I would say. It is not confiscatable by governments. It's basically what US did with the European gold that was given to them to custody while Europe was in World War I and II. You know, the Americans tried to, they did not return it, and they just told to use US currency as the reserve currency for the world. You know, they pushed that idea onto the, that's what Bretton Woods in 1933 created. And that's when the gold standard, there is a paper currency that needs to be used instead of, and with the gold backing. And what eventually did that is US started spending, you know, it wanted to retain its power to be a reserve currency, it started spending money on unlimited money on military. Military spending was high. That's how they started, doing all the wars that we have seen, the Vietnam War, the Korean War. And I know they've been doing wars even till date, you know, on Afghanistan, Iraq, and whatever you name it. You know, they're just printing money out of thin air, and they themselves become a debt nation, and they're debts override their earnings every year. And even today, the military, U.S. military audit is impossible. You know, they've been trying to audit their military, and till date they couldn't audit. You know, that's the problem. The government doesn't know where to stop the spending. They just printed, you know, if you heard, they printed 40% of the entire money that have been printed since the U.S. currency came into origin and during this pandemic. 40% of the money so far printed. So, you know, government has a spending problem. They don't know how to control or limit their spending. So,
that is good. Sundar, I just have a point. Like let's just agree to disagree. I the gold standard was given away for a certain. The main reason was you can't control the money supply of the economic cycles that are growing and contracting through a certain benchmark standard. That's one. And number two, gold itself was highly volatile for any country to really, tie any value to that. And that's why it was given away. This is just an economic discussion, I think, at this point.
Argument Neo to understand what really happened. You know, it's President Nixon in 1971 decided to give away because, I told you, the U.S. had a spending problem. The government was overspending than the amount of gold they had. They were funding the military, basically, which was not the reason a country should be bothered about going around doing wars on other nations to interfere. You know, they had spending problem. Even with $11 billion gold reserve, the outstanding amount of spending that the government was doing was $25 billion at that time. And suddenly the France asked for them gold back. Nixon removed, the gold-pegged standard, and he said, from now on, treat a fiat as the ultimate sound money, fiat currency or U.S. dollar. And he pushed it, and no country could argue with that. And they just gave it away, by force, not by voluntary agreement. They had to give it away by force. That is how it is. And there is another book called Fiat Standard, also written by the same guy, Saifedean Ammous. Maybe these books will give a little clarity on how they were.
Sundar, so
gold standard was forcibly removed by US, and that's how all the countries agreed to also get out of gold standard.
Well, India was at the verge of
bankruptcy. This basically says that there is a human intervention there, but Bitcoin doesn't have human intervention here.
Sundar, like let's there are all good arguments, right? India was at the verge of bankruptcy in 1992 because of gold standard. They had to mortgage their gold. They found a way to kind of, get out of that situation. And then India went on the path of, changing their monetary policy, the way they kind of, do the fiat currency, the manage the money supply, and obviously the rest is history. Everybody knows what happened after 1992, rapid industrialization, privatization, getting rid of, gold standard, and all of those things have happened since then.
India has come from that point. India was not manufacturing, you know, was not a manufacturing hub then. We tried to import, you know, we just liberalized and opened the country to foreign direct investment. That's what happened in 92. We didn't really start manufacturing things like what China did. Now, still date, we are still asking, you know, trying to create a Make in India approach right now. We are yet to manufacture big industries, you know, that can provide a huge economic growth to this nation.
Those are separate problems, but I'm just going back to that gold standard problem. Like, India was in debt, was days away from not being able to meet its debt obligations. And gold standard was in effect in India at that point. And I'd say from 1992 till now, India has done really well after abandoning the gold standard.
So Sundar,
we can't go back to the Bitcoin standard. Like, I mean, it's going from one gold standard to another gold standard of some kind, right? And that's like 70, 80 years ago, right?
So let me put your points very valid. Let me put it in another way. Maybe Sundar will understand. Like, just imagine, like, you know that there is a limited amount of bitcoins that would be our mind. So what if a country like USA or something get too much wealthy? Nobody can be wealthy again because they have like 70-80% of anything reserve of Bitcoin or something. No country will able to compete with it or print its own money or something like that because they will have all the Bitcoins. So if you like have this kind of supply that is like gold, and once the first mover is taken over all the gold and majority of the supply and all, no other country can ever compete with it and things like that, which I think is a valid option, very valid reason to avoid Bitcoin also, I think. What do you think about that?
I think it will redistribute over a period of time, because if we start creating a working economy, you know, Bitcoin will move from one country to another. Like, you know, if you have manufacturing, they want to buy something out here. And, you know, the 21 million concept is, I'll explain that, you know, each Bitcoin, if we say 1 rupee is made of 100 paisa, you know, a single Bitcoin is made of 100 million Satoshi. So we can, so basically 2.1 quadrillion Satoshis are possible, you know, and the world population today stands at 7.9 billion. So that's way big amount of Satoshi.
But you know that already the top 0.1% holds the majority of wealth in whole world, right? So it is already distributed like that. So it's not far from reach to think about Bitcoins also in this way. Or even it can be divided. Like, you can divide paisas also. Just theoretically, you can divide paisas, and I will say they just have half of paisa. But it does not has any value to it and things like that. So I don't think, like, maybe the other coins that are giving away like 10% or something, they're algorithmic like that, their supply will be continuous. Maybe that those are the solutions, but still, I don't, in these all 10, 12 years of Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies emergence, no real business is accepting it. I cannot actually, but the point of currency is to purchase and sell goods. I cannot purchase anything from Bitcoin. So I don't know. It does not sound like it's...
That's right. No, I'm saying, you know, Bitcoin standard means it's only sound money. It is not currency. It cannot be currency yet, because people still have to accept it as a sound money across. They have to understand the Bitcoin in a much better way. Right now, we can retain the national identities. We can have the currencies which are going, you know, going well with the countries, like whatever respective currencies are there. Just, you know, make Bitcoin a sound money. You know, make Bitcoin a sound money and backed by that, and probably, you know, that's how.
By being that Bitcoin is limited in supply, totally breaks all the logic that it's a currency. Like, the currency has to be tied to some kind of your economic expansion and contraction, the GDP. Even if you're talking about a global level GDP, that, okay, you got to have a global currency, it has to tie back to supply and demand of money. At the same time, it has to be pegged to a certain value. Like, you value Bitcoin in USD. There is no inherent value of Bitcoin as such. You value it in USD. You say it's $40,000. It's worth $60,000. That's how we are
perceiving it right now today. But if you see a Bitcoin is one Bitcoin is Bitcoin, just like I say, one ounce of gold is 1 ounce of gold. So that Bitcoin has that all the qualities that gold has, and even much more than that. So that is what I'm saying. It is sound money on itself. It's a digital commodity. It's a commodity. It doesn't need anybody or anything to back it. It's already a commodity.
Discussion, Sundar. That's a Bitcoin paper discussion. The white paper and the yellow paper. But that's not what's like, if we argue on a little bit more detail, I think that then, you know, at least, you know, I can understand it a little bit better. But at the end of the day, if it's not stable, how can it be the currency becomes, you know, the challenging part.
You're right. It doesn't need to be currency now at all. It doesn't need it. It will take a one generation more or maybe a couple of generations before it will become even a currency. But right now, if it's treated as sound money, that's that would be great. That's all. It stands right now because there is a lot of volatility, as you know, you're saying, because of people still yet to understand all the nuances and qualities of the Bitcoin.
No, but there is a reason why we moved away from gold standard. If you just go by history and what, so Bitcoin is considered to be digital gold. Do you agree or disagree with that part?
Yeah, that's how we are saying it's basically property.
It's a property. It has a gold-based property, right? Limited supply. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's going to appreciate in value over the time and all that stuff. So fair points. All of those points are good. But that's a property of a commodity. It's not a property of a currency. And the proof of that is, if you look back in the history, there's a reason why people stopped trading in gold, first of all. We could have used gold as a barter standard. Sure, we can argue it was hard to move and whatever, so it could not have been moved. Sure, good enough. That's why people came in with the printed currency that was then tied to the gold standard, so that it can easily be exchangeable. Sure, it was still not digitally being, it was not easy to exchange it digitally, but you were able to trade the value using fiat money that was tied back to the gold standard. Gold was not easy to move, transfer, that's why the money came in. But then we know what happened. Eventually, we had to disconnect the money supply from the gold standard, because the gold standard was not able to keep up with the increasing and decreasing money supply, demand of money supply that the economies need. You've got GDP cycles that are expanding or contracting. You've got economic cycles. You've got economic crisis. Gold standard was not able to keep up with that. You talked about wars. Gold standard could not keep up with the money supply that's needed to support all of that stuff. That's why it had to be disconnected. And that's exactly what happened. And fiat currencies went on their own way to then starting to regulate the economies of every currency. So when I listen to this Bitcoin nonsense, when back in the day Bitcoin was created, that it's going to replace the money, and it's the new money or crypto like currency, that to me, it just is out of ignorance. I totally understand being a gold standard. I fully support of it. Great to invest in. I'm all for that. But it's an asset class. It's a commodity. Not a currency. It doesn't have the properties of currency. It has proven against, like, you know, if you look at the history, being a gold standard, you know, being mapped to a gold standard, it failed miserably. We have the proof in the history.
Okay. Now, what really happened when you say, you know, couldn't take control of GDP, but we forgot to understand that the economics, what the Keynesian economics, as they call, says that there's abundance of resources available on the planet. You know, there's a blind spot there which the economics doesn't take into account, that the, you know, any kind of economic growth that has happened treats all the there is abundance. You know, there's unlimited supply of resources on the planet. That's really absurd. You know, when economic is treating like that, now we are going on a hyper utilization of debt money, basically creating debt for an infinite amount of time, which is absurd, because that's how the problems of environmental disaster, you know, man-made pollution and economic deforestations is happening, because the economic treats those as externalities, and we are going on damaging our environment, treating that way. So we have to hold certain projects accountable to sustainability practices, and nobody took care of that part, because we blindly want to support and supply funding to all kinds of projects that come up without doing a due diligence of being recycled. So that's where this control of having a limited currency comes into play. It'll hold the governments and the corporate banks accountable to not just fund everything and everything on the planet, say treating there's unlimited supply of resources. And
that currency is not holding the value. That currency has unlimited inflation. It's an inflationary currency.
That's right. That's what the fiat currency is. Basically, it's inflationary currency. There is
no. So then what is the problem Bitcoin solving?
That's why we need a limited value of a sound money to back it. You know, that you don't go beyond. So we need a deflationary.
But you're contradicting your own point. Sundar, you're contradicting your own point. I agree. Fiat currency is inflationary. Is Bitcoin not inflationary?
No, it's deflationary. It's deflationary. Did you see what happened when the economic, during the pandemic, the price of Bitcoin went high? You know, it went skyrocketed because it's deflationary. all the people can pull back on their money and hold it in Bitcoin, and that's where its prices goes up, and so that the essential commodities on the planet don't skyrocket. You know,
the moment the demand's going to rise for Bitcoin, you know, you're going to see that it's rising in value, but it's rising in value against the dollar. I think it's a very fundamental discussion.
No, I would say, you know, the rise in value in dollar is only what the crypto exchanges have created in the minds of people. Bitcoin doesn't need crypto exchanges to be proven as a commodity. It doesn't even need a crypto exchange. It doesn't even need to be hosted on a crypto.
There are 21 million Bitcoins. Let's say all are mined and we are done. 21 million Bitcoins, right? So how do you deal with that in an expansive and a contracting economic cycle? What are the implications to that? Let's say you're doing everything in Bitcoin. Now what's happening in that? What's the correlation?
So basically, the funding will happen with, you know, if you understand the fundamentals of the Bitcoin, you will not easily give up on that. It's like you are asking my gold to fund your company. Now I'll be very, very careful about how I give away my gold, which is always deflationary, and its price will keep going increasing from generation to generation. That's how it should have been going. But the bank started controlling the gold price. You know, if you know, JP Morgan got fined for manipulating the metals. The precious metals market in between 2010 and 2020, they got fined for $60 million because that's how humans are. You know, we cannot be trusted. We cannot depend on human beings.
But then what does that have to do with the Bitcoin?
Bitcoin doesn't give that opportunity to a human being. It's uncontrolled by humans.
Neo is saying, I guess, is once a person is rich, he will stay rich ever. In the terms of Bitcoins,
you will be very careful to give away. You know, we are trying to ruin the planet here. You know, if we behave in a responsible way and hand over our Bitcoins only to people who are creating sustainable projects, that's where the things is. Now we are funding left and right. You know, whoever can lobby a politician to, you know, passes the bill to, you know, give away his project or approve his projects. Blindly, why is the corruption and so much of nonsense going around in the planet right now? We are abusing the planet. Basically, so now easily people, when you have a sound money which is always deflationary and its prices keeps increasing over generations, so people will again think, you know, why should I give away my Bitcoin to this project, or why should I start my
but
own
the
company?
Thing is, once you are rich, no other person will have a chance to become rich like you, because you are the first mover, or your family was rich in Bitcoin. Now you're always going to be rich, because it's just like in Age of Kings, they had a lot of treasures and gold and this. Nobody can compete. Impossible.
But it is distributed across the planet, actually. It's not held by one single person in one single country. You know, the opportunity is still there for other countries to even mine, meaning. The mining of Bitcoin can go up to 2140, actually.
For you and me, it's possible, but there are so many poor countries who don't even have fiat currencies. People living in Africa and all, they don't even have access to that. They won't ever catch up.
Absolutely. You know what has happened? It is solving the problem of actually even this remittances organizations, which have stopped fund, you know, helping out people, you know, shutdown of banks in areas like which are economically inflated, like Venezuela, Lebanon. You know, they still have to feed their families and they have to maintain their standard of living, right? But they are suffering for no reason, because the government's screwed up their economies. So even if you take the example of Afghanistan, the Western Union stopped funding the, you know, giving, allowing remittances. Now at this time, you know, this crypto, the Bitcoin is trying, can save them, save those people, actually. You know, for no wrongdoings, those citizens are suffering at some point. You know, even the African nations have started, you know, using cryptos, Bitcoin heavily now. You know, that's why Jack Dorsey has quit Twitter, and he's
African nations, maybe 1% or 0.01% of people are actually might be using them. Not the people in need of the reform is using them.
Today, there are a lot of nations where the banks have not entered the remotest parts of the countries.
And
they don't
using
have any way to earn interest on their currency. They're living on a regular survival basis. They cannot store a value. They don't have a store of value. You know, it's not giving the underprivileged people an opportunity to save money long term and retire in a dignified way, actually.
Okay.
A lot of people living there.
So I want to ask you two more things apart from this topic. So my first concern apart from this concern is, I don't want everybody to know my assets. So when I'm going to a movie with somebody, when I will transfer it transfer him the bitcoins, he will know my address, wallet address, and then he can just get my history, where I paid, what I paid, and what my transaction history is, and how much amount of bitcoin I have in my bank, in my wallet. This is a invasion to my privacy. I would not ever want a lobby boy or somebody to just look into my accounts and all. And Bitcoin, you know that it's all public. So how would that be dealt with? And what about the transactions? Because it is very expensive to transact, and it takes a lot of time for a transaction.
It is not expensive to transact. 100%, it is not expensive. You can move $1 billion. There was a transaction of $1 billion move on Bitcoin with just 10 cents of charge on the transaction. It happened, and you know, and your other question, like, so that regarding the transparency, you know, there are other ways. You know, if you do peer-to-peer payments without going through the crypto exchange route, there is still anonymity there. You can still retain your anonymity. There is, you don't have to get all your coins in a KYC fashion. You can get non-KYC coins too. So that is another big topic that, you know, is possible.
One question from my side. So as you said, like only finite Bitcoins will be there. A lot of, most of the Bitcoins, almost 90% are already mined. And I think most of it is holded by big rich million people, rich people. So very small amount, almost like 2-5% of is available with the small guys. So how do you see in the future, like this is flowed to other people around?
Yeah, basically, maybe, you know, your question is right for in perspective of India. Basically, we are late. Maybe, I mean, I'm not sure if I'm speaking right, but there are a lot of people, you know, we do not know. Once the Bitcoin came, I really know some people who started mining Bitcoins in 2014 or 13. Also, some people bought Bitcoins and kept with them. So we don't know the exact figures of how many people do not know. But yeah, to the extent that it has a worldwide reach. It is not in the hands of few rich people. We are still allowing to be held by them. Even if you start like purchasing Bitcoin on a daily basis for a few ₹100 or ₹500 or ₹1,000 worth, and then just holding it for long term, you will see, you know, don't have to worry about volatility in the short term, but you should think about what your returns will be five plus years, you know. Then yeah, that way you will see, at least you will have something with you that will hold. You know, that's how, you know, you understand the fundamentals. Now, I said, who is going to fight for this corruption at the top level, where, you know, it's impossible to stop somebody to lobby and abuse the resources on the planet right now. The kind of economy that we have and the kind of political clout that we have lobbying going around. You know, a single individual cannot do so. Whoever, I mean, it's basically a nature's way of also allowing you to naturally, the smartest people understand what that we are taking the control back from greedy corporates or greedy governments, and then, you know, we're trying to create a better future for people. So if some people don't get it natural way, you know, we cannot
survival of the fittest.
So
just a second, Nilesh, I'll just complete and give it. So my point is here the same thing. The problem is just shifting from one pyramid to another pyramid. Actually, that's where I have a question. See, I completely agree that Bitcoin has all these like benefits that you mentioned. I fully agree to that point. But now the pyramid is shifting from like fiat now to let's say Bitcoin, and also all the top guys are already sitting there. So now the same thing will happen there also. How can we like make sure that it doesn't repeat now?
See, at the end of the day, nobody can. I mean, I would say the principles behind the Bitcoin is such that right now the people who are holding it, especially if you listen to what Michael Saylor speaks about, if you create a community of people where we understand that sustainable practices are an essential part of, you know, saving this planet, you know, from going to wars or preventing world wars anymore, because we are so much high time preference people right now that, you know, everybody is behind, you know, creating, you know, using up the resources on the planet. So it will bring some kind of accountability. It's only a hope that, you know, we don't destroy the humanity by ourselves, you know, but it will delay that process. That's all I can say, because responsible people will be holding those Bitcoins in creating certain economies in the world, which is more sustainable, are going to create a sustainable places to live. But we cannot say that the North Koreans will not do what they want to do, or China will do what they want to do. Nobody can predict what they will do. But at least we'll be, you know, some responsible people will take, should be examples or role models to show them that you can live the world in, you know, live in a better way with a better economic space. That's all. We can only be role models.
I think you know about the environmental impact that is being done by mining
Bitcoin. Oh, that's a big topic, Nilesh. You know, if you see, that is not the reason. It is
I know. 1%. People give the reason that they run on a renewable source of energy, but the argument is that those renewable sources of energy could have been used for other things for which the fossil fuels are used. So energy is energy at the end of the day.
Nilesh, you know, that's exactly my point. You know, when you say blindly that, you know, some other people, some other thing, that's the question. You know, if the governments and corporates were so responsible, why is the planet so abused right now, that how it looks and so much corrupted right now? You think the current structure is right? But that is one thing. And if you see the energy, if you go through Michael Saylor's some YouTube videos where he talks specifically about the energy consumption, it is using less than 1% of what the entire planet is consuming. It is nothing compared to the vehicular pollution, nothing compared to industrial and mining pollution. It doesn't beat it. Those are 10,000 times more polluting the planet than all these practices can be stopped. Considering that if an individual is being handed a Bitcoin whose value can keep rising on it on a regular basis, then people will want to ease down and look for sustainable practices than just going around high time preference, doing whatever projects they can take up to abuse the earth. That's all.
So, Sundaram, let me ask you a question. Why not Ethereum? Or why not Solana?
Yeah, all the altcoins have owners and a bunch of VCs who got started with pre-sale launches that they got in with minimum entry points. And then before and after that, they got ICOs launched and they... You know, these are like certain few privileged peoples are holding this, projects in their hands. And these people can themselves, shut down the operation, or they can be forced to shut down by the government itself. You know, it's like other companies. These are equities, basically. They cannot sustain. They cannot. There is no kill switch for Bitcoin, but there is kill switch for all the altcoins. That's all I can say.
So what do you think about the taxes? If the government or any agency is not taking the taxes, who will build your roads? Who will build the supply to your home for the electricity, water supply, the pumps, the everything that we take granted for?
No, those are basic necessities of humans. We are going to spend money for the basic necessities.
No, if you're going to transition in Bitcoin, there is no tax, right? So if you're not paying for the services that being offered by the governments, I think government has a bad repo, but we just forget how important government is, because just remove the police for 2 days and
taxes will remain. Nilesh, nobody's telling taxes will go away. The governments are there.
If the transaction is in Bitcoin, the taxes will be paid in INR. That's what you're saying.
Well, the Bitcoin white paper doesn't have a provision for taxes, Sundar.
Okay, that's where I said, you know, right now, if we are retaining whatever the process that we are doing, use Bitcoin standard, you know, as a replace the position, give it the position of gold right now, and let the currencies continue.
No, but then the gold standard, you know, had proven, had disproved itself like 50, 60 years ago.
Again, Neo, maybe you should, the very good YouTube video where Michael Saylor debates with this guy called Frank Giustra, who is the owner of gold mines, where they have a debate. You know, it's about 45 minutes to 1 hour debate on YouTube. I think that will give you a huge clarity. I am not able to recall everything that he speaks. He speaks in a very, very economic and technological way, how Bitcoin is better than gold.
No, I mean, I know Saylor has an agenda to shill Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Like in every forum.
So probably that'll give an idea, but I cannot recall everything.
Yeah, right? So Saylor is a shiller of Bitcoin, right? So, I mean, that's given, right? So, point being... I'm not going to go by Saylor's opinion. I'm going to go by somebody like, you know, some folks with some deep research who have done some assessment, tying it back to properties of Bitcoin to really the economy and the implications. Like, I haven't heard any economist come out, like of reputable background, come out, publish a paper, and the paper has been peer reviewed by his peers across the world. Like, that's how papers get published, right? So if let's say there's a case of Bitcoin becoming the global currency, somebody should have come forward to write a paper, and that paper gets peer reviewed by other PhD level economics across the world, just the way every economic paper gets reviewed, and then it becomes public, right? But why doesn't anybody has done this so far?
Neo, if you see all the major companies or organizations have been launched by CEOs who are college dropouts. Now, there is a reason why we are allowing, why are we putting these economists on pedestal, actually. There's no reason to put them. And we have seen where they have not argued on all the abuse that's happening for resources on the planet till date. They keep themselves silent. They're not even visible in the arena. They are seeing what is happening to the world, but they still keep silent. So we cannot depend on the kind of economies that they have created. So they don't really understand.
I'm talking about companies, not all of that.
Saylor and the kinds of Elon Musk and Saylor, these people have lived the life of, they started companies. They've gone through the problems. They've suffered through the growing up. They've been through the pain. But these economists are just paper holders or degree holders who are sitting in colleges, school, and giving lectures to people. These people, have they really worked out? Have they started a company? Have they gone through all the cycles of pains of economic cycles? No, they just push out.
I think the pain.
It's like the guy who has been on the real field and experienced what happens. Only they are qualified to speak about and creating the economics. You know, we have given the PhD guys too much leverage on all this, putting them on top of head. You know. I don't think they deserve that crown, basically.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I think, I have a different viewpoint here, but I guess we can agree or disagree. Like the world that we see around us, I mean, it's primarily being built by, like, obviously a lot of entrepreneurs who have driven out the use cases, but the fundamental technologies and even the fundamental ideas, everything fundamental to that has been, you know, pushed through our universities, through our educators, and through our PhD holders. Even these big companies that you're referring to, they rely on fundamental technologists and PhD holders who are driving the fundamental technology. Every university, every big company in US and Canada has tie-ups with the big universities where all the research happens. Even the internet that you see was invented in partnership between DARPA and universities. Facebook stood out in the university. So I totally agree with some pointers with the scientific community, the
from the engineering background or the science background, but definitely I will disagree with the economics PhDs, okay? Because these guys have not done anything great. I mean, really, you know, they have to realize how they have created this narrative that there is unlimited or abundance amount of resources on the planet that can be abused and to kill all the species on the planet. They don't really have not linked the biological aspect, you know, they have not linked. There is a dependency. There's a food chain that goes on in a planet. You know, there is a dependency why certain carnivores are less in number and certain herbivores are in, you know, there's a balance there. The food chain pyramid has been reversed. The population of humans has gone few billions in less than 100 years, which never happened in the history of humanity. You know, it took only 150 years to go from 1.3 billion in 1920s to 7.9 billion in 2021 right now. That is huge, man. That is, you are suffocating the planet.
All of this has nothing
to do with Bitcoin. All of this thing has to do with the drawbacks of fiat currency, which came out, where they blindly printed money to offer the opportunities to every Tom, Dick, and Harry to compete.
But you talked about global warming, you talked about sustainability, you talked about, you know, bank scams, and you talked about a lot of those things. What does that have to do with Bitcoin? And what does it have to do with the fiat currency?
I think his point is that resources would be scarce artificially. People won't be able to access them, and that's how we'll get our carbon.
But then we're talking about socialism here.
Yeah, there's also the thing is, there will be a responsible way of funding.
There is a responsible way of funding. You don't want to give away your sound money like gold too easily to fund projects which are going to destroy the planet. There is a limited amount of that kind of currency. Now, 21 million is a limited amount that you don't want to give away to anybody.
And who decides that?
The guys who are holding Bitcoin know that, you know, the real value of what they're holding, definitely.
So they decided who gets what?
Who else decides? You know, I mean, I would say, why not? How did we even get into a government thing when, you know, if you say there were landlords before, there were people who were holding gold before, they became entrepreneurs, you know, when the government formed. It was not the government just like that, even in 100, 150 years ago.
So I think your point is the entrepreneurs should be left to rule the country. Countries,
yes,
right?
You know, the trade and the entrepreneurs.
Do you know that
that's what creates the growth of economy, right?
So these industrialists became so big a lot by cheating and all, and a lot of black histories behind Facebook stealing ideas and Twitter spreading hate speech, promoting hate content just for their own benefits, and you are trusting them to control the government, and you're trying, and these and you're thinking that about their own interest and about their national interest, they will think about the world interest and do the right thing. That's pretty far-fetched.
You know what each of these companies, Facebook tried to create Diem or Libra for that matter. You know, they didn't take up Bitcoin at all. So each of them who are high time preference, they want to own a currency of their own. So they're not, that's why, you know, there is this very slight way of, you know, if you see how Bitcoin is actually moving and becoming, you know, it has principles behind it, man. That's what I'm saying. It is not going away. Now the Diem has been given away by the Facebook, and they lost $230 billion on the market right now a couple of days ago. So if you see where, if a single person is trying to become rich, that also will not be accepted. So basically, it's a there is a lot of principles behind it. So maybe I cannot explain here right away.
No, but then I have another problem now with this Facebook and Diem and Lira that you're talking about. That has nothing to do with Bitcoin. Lira was a stable coin. There are already tons of stable coins in the market. It just didn't have a demand. They were too late to the party. It's a totally different argument or a discussion with Lira. It has nothing to do with Facebook was trying to take over the Bitcoin and then, look, they failed. I mean, that's not what happened there.
No, they didn't take over Bitcoin. I'm saying he wanted to create his own currency and try to capture the internet. You know, the internet money, there is this, there's a natural war going on. Who wants to be the internet money?
Right, basically. Right. And he was redundant. Yeah, the idea was redundant. Mark Zuckerberg's idea was redundant. So rightfully, it went down the drain, right? Because there's definitely no need of any more stable coins. You got USDC, you got TUSD, you got BUSD, you got USDT and God knows what, DAI, and you know, there's a whole bunch of others. Like, who needs another dime or lira that's going to be pegged to US dollar? And why?
That's right. Nobody needs a stable coin. There are already nations holding the stable coins.
Yeah, so that's why it went down. But that's nothing to do with the Bitcoin. Like, that's just totally different.
I was trying to answer Nilesh's question where he's saying we are giving away into the hands of, you know, Facebook was going to...
These entrepreneurs to rule the world, right? You accepted that. So I was saying they don't have a good image, you know, although people in India see them like gods and all these AliExpress and Jack Ma and all, but they work for themselves. Nobody work for you, and this is not a democracy country. This is not democracy. I never elected these tech companies, giant owners, to rule my nation or something. So I don't feel fine to give away all the money to them, and I don't feel that they would make the right decision for me. So like you are saying that they are holding all the coins and they will distribute it.
There will still be democracy. They should also compete. They should also get the opportunities. That's what I'm saying. You know, it'll create a sustainable balance here. Maybe we'll go sensibly. We'll take the economy forward. That's all I'm saying. You know, it's not like give away entirely to them. You know, sensible way of moving, you know, running the democracies and economy. That's all.
It's a big experiment. So, and I don't know, like, I think that big experiment can be just taken.
Yeah, we have easily given into the hands of fiat experiment for 100 years, sir. That's what I'm saying.
We see where we stand now. We failed really well as a globe.
We failed miserably with fiat experiment.
It depends whether you're looking at glass half full or half empty situation here. I mean, I think, you know, world has done great. You look at the amount of value that has been created. Look at last 100 years. People used to be on the streets kind of chopping each other's heads off. And look at the world we are here. 100 years we've come this far. So I don't know what you're talking about.
It comes with huge price, right, Neo? It's not that everything is pink roses right now. It has created its own kind of problems also.
But then it's not going to be like Bitcoin is an answer for everything. I mean, those problems are different. And obviously, you know, nothing's perfect, right? So, you know, we've taken big steps forward. And yes, we have created some problems as part of it. You've got global warming, and we have, you know, incorrect distribution of wealth. I think we've skewed from one socialist side extreme to becoming like really, really capitalistic, at least in the Western part, you know, where I am. And I think it comes with its own set of challenges and problems, right, that have to be dealt with. But all that has nothing to do with Bitcoin. like nowhere close.
Neo, maybe I couldn't give you the entire picture. Maybe you know I cannot just cannot give you all the details over just by speaking to you. Maybe we have to read some literature here. You know, I just referred a few of them. There's a lot.
I read a lot, and I've done a lot of extensive programming. I saw Lehman Brothers lights turn off on the 18th of September, if it was 2008, right in front of me. I'm walking past Times Square, the lights are on, I come back in the evening, lights are off. So I've been through all of that stuff. When the Bitcoin's first white paper came out, I read it. I've mined Bitcoins, I've sold Bitcoins, I've bought Bitcoins. Like I've dealt, so I know Bitcoin right from the day it came out in New York back then.
Okay, so, yeah, maybe we have to read the literature which has come recently, like by this guy called Saifuddin Amos, his Bitcoin Standard and Fiat Standard. Maybe that will give you a good perspective. There's quite a few books called Layered Money by Nick Bhatia. You know, there are Sovereign Individual by some other guy. There's quite a lot of literatures which will interlink, that will connect the dots, what I'm saying here. You know,
yeah, but it's a perspective, right? At the end of the day, it's a perspective. So, when you're reading a book, it's a perspective of somebody trying to convey to you a certain message. So
everyone here has read some literature to be where we are right now today. You know, we got our degrees like that. Come on.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And that's what I'm saying, that, you know, a lot of those books, and you look at Saylor, the guy's like a shiller in my view. He holds one of the biggest, stake in the Bitcoin, and he's just shilling. I mean, I never seen him argue with a PhD level economist any argument. He's arguing with people who don't know anything about economics. So, it's like really funny, watching him. So, look, I'm all open.
That's right, Neo. The nations are being run by people who don't understand economics properly, who don't really want to create sustainable practices. I won't say, it's not wrong to say everyone is shilling here. Everyone is a marketer on the planet, actually, if you see. So we cannot just put a dark side or a gray, image on somebody saying he's shilling this or shilling that. But yeah, if there is a truth to that, maybe, you will tilt to that side. That's all it is. Everyone has their own perspective. But if there is more truth to something, that's where the world will move. That's all it is.
I want to say one thing to Sundar. The whole debate about the environment and being sustainable and all everything. There is this thing that when the dinosaurs were alive, the carbon level were twice as much as it is today, even after all the industries are running and having all these things, and the earth was flourishing and the animals were double of the size and the plants. There has been experiments when the carbon level rises, the absorptions also rises equally in the plants, and they basically flourish. And we all are carbon based entities here. If we burn ourselves, we'll find out we become carbon. So all life forms are carbon based life forms. So this argument, and that's why Trump pulled off the Paris Treaty of the environment, because it was like, we don't know, people were saying that ozone is getting a hole in it, and then it all automatically recovered, and then people said that the sea levels are rising, but they never rose. So this thing is working a lot of on expectations, speculations, and it is not actually backed by any science. It is just assumptions that we are moving in that way, and the carbon emissions is not has not resulted in the things that were claimed to be. So
Nilesh, why do you see the Delhi government decided to run odd or even kind of cars on a basis, and why does Delhi go through all this pollution?
There's a lot of gases. The monoxide is the dangerous one, and
you understand there is a scientific reasons when we say some things are there and being abused, and we've seen a lot of deforestations happen. We destroyed a lot of forests across the planet. There is scientific backing, actually, Nilesh. We are seeing very low time frame here. The Earth was born 4 billion years ago.
That's my exact
point. And we are destroying something in less than few hundred years. Okay, we are destroying that which was flourishing for billion years. What is this is basically, if we are imbalancing the food chain, so maybe that we are going to kill humanity over a long run, slowly but painfully. Or the planet or the nature would take that. But yeah, eventually, that's not the way we want to run in a country or, kill the species on the planet, right? Definitely, if humans go away, a lot of other creatures will flourish anyway. Other plants and trees will flourish anyway. So yeah. It's we have to be worried, actually. all other species will survive if we are not.
Yeah, but there is no black and white, good or bad in one environment. That's my point. Is
that doesn't mean we go on and indiscriminately abuse the resources on the planet.
We are not. Look, what I'm trying to say is that a lot of things has been thrown just because to keep us back, because all these countries, Western countries, made a lot of things, their buildings and the infrastructure and everything. And when our time came, they are saying, yo, think about the environment, don't do this, don't do that, don't make factories, and we will put carbon tax on you and this and that. We have to understand that this is a whole strategy going on. And because of nation, when it's want to come out of poverty and all, it has to do a lot of emission and these all things, and these all things are not as bad as they're made to be. And the world is a good place, you know. It's just a perspective. People are very happy. The health span is moving up. There's much better infrastructure, road, healthcare, everything is much better. So I don't think we did bad in the terms of quality of this world. But that's my perspective. Maybe that's not that much of yours. Maybe,
there are a lot of perspectives. Even if you look from how the nations are dealing with each other, if you look macro perspectives, they know the bigger picture here. You know, maybe we can see from individual levels, but if you really read macro economics, that's where the real picture of what's happening in the world comes into place. And why did the countries decide, or this even kind of pandemic was created in the first place? I don't know. I mean, there's a conspiracy there too. It suddenly spread across the planet, and we are to shut down all the economic activities. There is some conspiracy theories behind these two. So it depends on what you're seeing. It's like somebody who can see the whole elephant or not. You know, if you see one part of it, you will think what, you will get one perspective. There's a picture of that somewhere I saw. A person is holding the leg and he thinks that's the entire elephant, something like that. So it's huge. The perspectives are huge. So maybe I may not have all the answers. Maybe if you can listen to Michael Saylor's videos, he'll give a very clear picture, crystal clear picture. Maybe he has more knowledge. Maybe that would be a great starting point for you guys to find what we see from the guy who has been, who understand that. Guys, I think it's quite late here. I would like to drop off. It was very nice being with you guys.
Thank you. Yeah, man. Sure. Take care.
11:30. And Neo, and it was great talking to you. Great discussion, guys. Samvid, I think thanks for giving this opportunity. I think I took a lot of time. I hope it was valuable. Good night, guys.
Thank you, Sundar, for your discussion.
Yeah, so I was hearing a... So now I was hearing, I had my dinner and I came back. It's like 11:30 PM in India, but Neo, Cryptic and Sundar had an amazing discussion, and also I think Nilesh participated a lot. I mean, it is always I could get the point. I mean, Bitcoin versus alts and everything, it spanned across, each and every topic was like covered from it.
Yeah, Samit, you there?
You were listening to the Crypto Hub India podcast. Do follow us wherever you are listening so that you get notified about the latest episodes as soon as they're out. We are active on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Telegram, and Clubhouse. Visit cryptohubindia.com to get all our social links. This is Nirmal Sarkar signing off. Thank you.